Welcome to Look Ahead Radio and Viewpoints Around the World. My name is Tom Arms, and in a moment I'll be joined by my old friend Lockwood Phillips. This week we're talking about the opening of the new U.S. Embassy in Jerusalem, and of course the clashes between the Israeli troops and the Palestinians from Gaza. I hope you enjoy listening. Thank you very much.
Welcome to Look Ahead Radio with Tom Arms and Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Again, this portion of the program has been pre-recorded to accommodate our foreign editor's sleep schedule, which usually tries to make bed before midnight. And this is a few minutes before midnight as we are speaking with him, although it's not as we speak to him live. As you hear it this evening, it is. And with that, Tom, good evening to you. Thanks for taking the time to be with us.
It's always a pleasure to speak with you, Lockwood.
I tell people that all the time. Very quickly, before I
hope you didn't detect the note of irony there.
There was no irony. All sincerity, I do believe. Let's talk about, just very quickly, I'm curious about the weather there in London.
Well, today it's a bit dull, gray, and cold, a little bit misty. Yesterday it was bright sunshine, you know, everyone was running around without any clothes on, or very few clothes. Mm. Today they're covered up with hats and coats and gloves and everything else.
Okay, you know, the fact of clothing in Europe is always fascinating me, particularly in light of our conversations last week, as I recall, associated with a snooker player who did his interview au naturel. We won't belabor that topic this afternoon, but I do want to move on to a few other items here with you, Tom. And of course, first and foremost, I'm curious, nuptial excitement there in London and the United Kingdom?
Well, nuptial upsets, I think, is a better way to describe it. You know, they're very worried about the fact that Meghan's father is unlikely to turn up to walk his daughter down the aisle.
Well, I read a story earlier today that he is reconsidering that. And there's also some questions as to the publicity and some of the issues associated with his involvement with the paparazzi and a few other items. I know that this is really a struggle, but is there excitement there in London about this?
Oh, there is excitement, you know, and as for the nuptial upset, I just think it's worth pointing out that, you know, no matter how high up you go on the social ladder in this country or any other country, you're going to have problems when there's a wedding.
Oh, absolutely. And all right, that just curious, that is scheduled for when? And by the way, have you gotten your invitation? Are you attending?
Well, I don't know. I think I might be busy.
Okay.
I had to say, no, I'm washing my bald spot.
All right. And my question is there a lot of excitement in the streets?
Oh, there's a lot of excitement. There'll be street parties. You know, everyone will be watching it on television. My street's not having a party, but the street on either side of us is having a party, and I'll probably go to those. It'll be fun.
It's just an excuse for a big party as well. All right, let's move on to another item breaking the news recently. Melania Trump, the First Lady, was hospitalized. I'm curious, did that get much coverage there in the United Kingdom?
It did get not a lot of coverage. It did get some coverage, not a massive amount.
Associated with that, of course, is the continuing saga of the president and Russia and Stormy Daniels. I'm curious, again, we're going to get into more important issues here, far more important issues, as a matter of fact, with you, Tom. But just curious, is that still being reported there in the press?
Stormy, Mueller, Russia, I'd say they're all on the back burner. There's nothing particularly exciting that British journalists have located in America on those topics in the past week or so. And it all seems to be boiling over or simmering nicely and waiting for the next big development.
Okay. And then, of course, associated with that, the concerns associated with Kanye West and the fact that he's shown support for President Trump, which is caused quite a stir within the rap community. I'm curious about two items on this very quickly with you, Tom. And again, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com, Look Ahead Radio, trying to gauge just what the world sees of what's going on here in the States. Kanye West's remarks, were they highly regarded or reported? And then the other question I have for you is, what role do celebrities and particularly musicians and the music industry play in politics there in the UK and Europe? Do they have any influence similar to that of Kanye West?
Yes, it's very similar.
Really?
When they get involved in politics, I mean, they have their followers, and they follow their acting career, they follow their music career, and for some reason they think that because they can sing well, mm-hmm. They have profound political beliefs as well, which I think is a mistake. And not always. There are some actors and singers who spend a lot of time studying politics and make important contributions. Most people here do not think Kanye West's contribution is particularly valuable. They don't think rappers are particularly, you know, I suppose there are always exceptions, but I don't think they associate rappers with being political figures.
Mm-hmm.
And Kanye West was certainly reported, but not in any great detail.
Okay, that I find interesting in light of the fact that he gained a tremendous amount of publicity here. And of course, the music community, which he's a part of, reacted as well. So it was as much within his own industry that created such a stir. And then a quick item on this one, and this may take a few more moments. We've read with interest that President Trump has reached out to the Chinese over their electronics firm ZTE, which has expressed concerns that it may have to shut its doors as a result of tariff issues and tariff negotiations. I'm curious how that is being reported there in the European press.
Well, that's being reported within the context of, why don't you do the same thing for the Europeans?
Ah.
You're helping out. You're helping out ZTE. But what about the Europeans and Iran sanctions? What about the Europeans and aluminum and steel sanctions? Why are you being so friendly to the Chinese? They're not your allies. We are.
I know. And amidst all of this, and of course, I'm curious if this is seen as an issue that has, forced the president to get off message and possibly to alter his approach towards the economic sanctions and tariffs that he was concerned about.
Well, I think it probably could be. And I know you don't always want my opinion, but here it is, Lockwood, is that he needs the Chinese when it comes to Korea. And that is higher up his priority list than things that are happening in Europe at the moment.
I think that that is a valid observation in light of the fact that even as early as today, I did see that related to military operations and issues associated with North Korea and the training that's ongoing now with South Korean troops and military, that the president is seeming to dial that back a little bit. Obviously, you see this as part of the bigger concern associated with a potential summit, which is in itself a little bit in question with President Kim Jong-un and President Trump being a driving issue for not only the relations with China, but also in the Korean summit.
Yes, absolutely.
And then finally, related to that, news of the Korean summit. Again, a lot going on there in your hometown and in your country, the United Kingdom, and also in Europe as well. Is the summit getting much discussion there in the European press?
It's getting a lot of discussion, but this has been a big week for other news as well. So again, you know, I wouldn't say it's on the back burner by any means. It's certainly on the middle burner.
All right. We're going to get back to those big issues here in just a moment with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Always to remind you that we are, in fact, pre-recording this because it's airing live. It's now almost 11:15 p.m. his time, as it is 5 hours ahead of us. You're listening to Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Again, we are pre-recording this portion of the program to accommodate the sleeping schedule, he being 5 hours ahead of us, and so moving on to midnight, his time there in London. Tom, as always, do appreciate your time. Let's talk about, I think, the elephant in the room, and of course, that having to do with the Jerusalem embassy, a U.S. Jerusalem embassy, the events in Gaza, the Palestinian issue, and you've also made a note on here, Israel's 70th birthday. So let's talk about this for a few minutes. What is the coverage and what is the basically the opinion of the European community about all that's been happening there for the past week?
The coverage is wall-to-wall. The opinion is that it's the fault of Mr. Netanyahu and Mr. Trump.
Was there any coverage related to the fact that, for example, the Senate Majority Leader, Mr. Schumer, Senator Schumer, applauded the president on the relocation or the opening, if you will, of the new embassy there in Jerusalem?
I didn't see that. A lot of it was focused on the attacks on the Palestinians or the Palestinians' attacks on the border fence. Mm-hmm. You know, that's where most of the focus has been.
Now, that being said, of course, one other aspect, and this is something that's been getting a lot of coverage here just recently, I might add, and the fact that the Senate and the House of Representatives in the United States, of course, had voted in favor of this move to Jerusalem, the embassy move to Jerusalem, over 10 years ago, and actually more than 10 years ago, and that three presidents have been given the authority to make that move and have chosen not to do it. Now, of course, President Trump is doing that. Is, again, there any recognition that it's more than just the president's decision, that the U.S. has, as a body, has made a decision to make that move? It's just never happened until this year.
It's certainly that has been reported. But in the context of previous presidents, when faced with the actual realities on the ground, realized it was a mistake to do that. That is the context in which it's been reported, mm-hmm. that the Congress reflects popular will, but sometimes popular will is not always the right or practical will when it's applied in a foreign country.
Gotcha. All right. Let's talk about this in relationship to Israel's 70th birthday.
Well, I just quote, for instance, all the newspapers and all the radio, television stations, everyone is more or less condemning it. They have pointed to the juxtaposition between the smiling faces and the over-the-top ceremonies involving Netanyahu and Ivanka and Jared, mm-hmm. And just juxtaposition on the front pages of photographs right next to those photographs of Palestinians being shot and tear gassed.
Right.
The Guardian quote says that Mr. Trump and Mr. Netanyahu have capitulated to a vision of brutal domination over benighted people. Hmm. And that it is inexcusable for soldiers of the military, especially those under democratic civilian control, to shoot and kill protesters, almost all of whom were unarmed.
And
that is how it's being projected here in the UK.
I think this
in France and in Germany.
Okay, I think this is important. I just want to reflect on this for a moment. Of course, Tom Arms joining us from London, England, an expat, I might add. And I say that just to give you some background. But what we're talking about is how, this is important, how the European community and at large, and the United Kingdom being part of that, I'm making that connection, see what's happening in Jerusalem. And we're going to get to the impact of this on Iran and Iran relations here in just a few moments. The reaction in reaching out to the Palestinians, is there any effort from the European community, or are they just stepping back and watching this? What is the status of that?
The European community doesn't have as much influence as the U.S.
Okay.
In this. You know, they've always sort of, they have stepped aside over the years because the U.S. is the main backer of Israel, both financially, politically, mm-hmm. militarily, in every respect. I mean, it's billions and billions of dollars that goes every year from the secret fund in the U.S. to support Israel.
Right.
It wouldn't exist without American support.
And so the
European community has very little leverage over either American policy towards Israel or over Israel.
Is there a sense that there might be fallout impacting the European community as a result of this? Is there some concern? I'm thinking in the form of terrorism, things of this nature. Has anybody expressed any concerns in that regard?
Oh, yes. Well, I mean, obviously, you know, Europe is a lot closer to the Middle East than the United States, geographically closer. Anything that destabilizes the region affects Europe, as we've discovered with the Syrian conflict and the refugee problem.
The refugee problem, of course, is something that has direct impact on the European community. All right, Tom, the other question for you, you've got a note here, the American evangelical right and relationship, I gather.
This is coming out more and more. It's in the last few weeks, I've noticed it on television. It was a big item on talk radio this week. And that is the idea that Trump, in particular, needs the support of the evangelical right, and that there is a strong undercurrent or current of belief within the evangelical right that so many years from the founding of the State of Israel, the second coming of Christ will come, and we will have Armageddon, and that they are encouraging this by trying to undermine the two-state solution and support the far right within Israel. And the support for Trump is part of this.
Okay, now this is all being covered in the media there in the UK.
This is being covered in the mainstream media here.
Really? Huh.
They are saying that the evangelical right is a major force behind Trump's policies in Israel.
Well, they have been a force in his election, I might add, so I can appreciate the connection to that. Final question for you on this in relation to the events there in Jerusalem. The Gaza Strip and the Palestinian, the two-state solution, as you mentioned a few moments ago, is there a sense that this could eventually just, again, calm down after a period of time? Or is there a concern that this is going to accelerate and further problems to come in the years ahead?
They think it will accelerate, mainly because Netanyahu has gone on record as saying that the two-state solution is dead. And Trump supports Netanyahu, so by implication, he's saying the two-state solution is dead.
Interesting. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And of course, this is an issue that we need to watch carefully here in the States as well. I think it goes unstated. Tom, we're going to get back to a few other items I want to talk to you in a few moments ago about MI5. Warning, we've got to talk about the impact of the Iran sanctions on Europe. What impact those sanctions will have on the European community. And there's so many other things, such as the new Italian government plans and Iraqi elections. You're listening to Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment.
Observations of an Expat by Tom Arms from LookAheadNews.com. The press is under attack. It is accused of disseminating fake news, invasion of privacy, distortions, half-truths, and conspiracy theories. Journalists are demonized, denigrated, locked up, and even murdered. The media has always faced such problems. The power brokers pay lip service to press freedom, but have consistently been reluctant supporters. In rare rational moments, they acknowledge its value, but they throw up barriers the moment the media spotlight shines on their unsavory activities. The press has managed to see off such opposition because the law was behind it, and because its operations were based on sound commercial foundation. The former is still true, but changing in countries where populist governments are twisting the law. The latter is definitely no longer the case. The media's commercial base is rapidly eroding, and public interest is suffering as a result. For three centuries, the press prospered, and it is no coincidence that those same three centuries saw the fastest growth and the greatest advances in science, technology, and political thought in the history of mankind. Newspapers and magazines have been a channel through which flowed world-changing ideas and information. By the turn of the 20th century, every city in the world had at least one newspaper. Commercial restrictions were dictated largely by geography and technology. General circulation of the New York Times and Washington Post were restricted to a radius of about 100 miles from their respective printing plants, because that was how far the papers could be delivered. The British London papers did not achieve a national reach until the development of the railways. Market forces dictated that the editorial content reflected the varied interests of the readers in the respective geographic areas. New Yorkers read about events in New York with a focus on business and finance. The Washington Post was the paper to read for American government happenings. The national distribution of the London newspapers were different. They pointed the way to a readership based on ideology rather than geography. Then along came the broadcasters. Everyone thought they would destroy the printed word. Wrong. They complimented it. If stories broke in print, they were reported on air. If they broke on air, they were analyzed in print. That was not the case with the Internet. Within a few short years, the creation of Sir Tim Berners-Lee has brought both the broadcast and print media to their knees. The ultra-fast global Internet turned news into an instant on-demand commodity and destroyed geographic limitations. In doing so, it undermined the differentiated markets of the press. It then lowered the economic entry threshold so that anyone with a computer and Internet connection could enter a world that was previously reserved for deep-pocketed billionaires. In theory, this was a good thing. But then the cyberspace vacuum started to fill with lies, half-truths, and conspiracy theories, leavened with an underlying message of hate, bigotry, and racism. These news sites survived because either their owners were more interested in the cause than profit, or because a global reach coupled with free distribution meant that they would almost always find a big enough audience to attract advertisers if their content was outrageous enough. The traditional media tried to compete by going digital and carving out editorial niches which no longer attempted to attract a wide range of interest in a narrow geographic area. Instead, they aim for a narrow range of views in a wide, even global, geographic area. The New York Times, Guardian, and Washington Post became the global voices of liberalism. The Washington Times, Fox News, and Daily Telegraph became their conservative counterpart. The Daily Mail became the global disseminator of news about the Kardashians and the Beckhams. The shock jocks of American radio became more shocking as figures such as Alex Jones, Rush Limbaugh, and Sean Hannity competed for audience by trying to out-shock each other. Governments have responded by threats of regulation. But the answer lies in measures to return the press to a sound commercial footing. Only a financially sound press can be a free press.
We now return to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And one more time to remind you, this portion has been pre-recorded because it's nearly, 11:30 p.m. Tom's time, since he is 5 hours ahead of us. So we have pre-recorded this to accommodate his sleeping schedule, which I'm sure he appreciates. Tom, we were chatting a few moments ago about Israel, the 70th birthday, the relocation of the U.S. Embassy in Jerusalem, and I failed to ask a quick question about that. Any other countries looking to possibly relocate to Jerusalem as a result of this decision to locate the U.S. Embassy, or are they are going to stay as they currently are, and I think, in Tel Aviv?
Yes, there are some. Some in Eastern Europe are talking about relocating to Jerusalem. I think the Romanians, Bulgarians, Poles, those are countries which are very dependent on U.S. military support through NATO. And I think that's one of the reasons why they're thinking of moving to Jerusalem. At the same time, South Africa and Turkey have just said that they are thinking about breaking off diplomatic relationships with the U.S. Because of the move to Jerusalem.
Okay. We won't belabor nor debate this, and I say that, and I don't know that you nor I would want to get into a debate on that, but it's just interesting to see the reaction. Let's move on to MI5 warning. What exactly is the warning?
Well, it's basically saying Russia's up to no good, and really, we've got to wake up in a big way. It came from Andrew Parker, and he's the head of MI5, so, the chief James Bond.
Mm-hmm.
And what he's saying is that they are basically guilty of malign activities against all the European democracies and also against the United States and Canada, that they're basically trying to undermine our system. And all their talk about saying, no, no, we're not guilty of anything, is complete rubbish. And he points out that the attempted poisoning of the ex-Soviet spy Skripal, Yuri Skripal, the Russians came up with 20 different other reasons for how it could happen. I mean, it really makes a complete joke out of the whole thing. He says that the Russians are actively involved in trying to crack our cybersecurity, that they're actively involved in placing trolls during elections all the time. It's nonstop.
I think this is a story that we need to hear in the States as well, because many of us would agree fully with the decision and observations of MI5. Curious about this in relationship to, and I want to move a little bit to the, well, south and east of Russia. And
can I make just one more point on the MI5?
Sure.
He was speaking at a conference in Berlin, trying to encourage greater security cooperation in the wake of Brexit.
Right.
And I think that's very important, because I think they're trying to strengthen the security ties with Europe, because they see some of their security ties with the U.S. weakening.
Interesting observation. All right, let's move on to President Erdogan of Turkey in Britain and the Anglo-Turkish strategic relationship. You know, President Erdogan has been, an enigma wrapped up in a puzzle? Or is it a puzzle wrapped up in an enigma? He's a hard first person to follow.
Either one. A mystery wrapped in a puzzling mystery wrapped in an enigma.
Yes, right. So my question, what gives?
Well, he's just spent 3 days in Britain.
Wow.
And the British have signed a big trade deal with him. Erdogan, his human rights record, as we know, is terrible. He's got 117 journalists locked up in prisons, whom he calls terrorists. He's having a battle against Kurds who want to have their own independence. The rest of the EU, especially Germany, the Netherlands, Austria, countries like that, are basically practically at war, or political war, with Erdogan. They've banned him from holding rallies in their countries and so forth. Not the Brits. They see him and have always seen him throughout history, not him personally, but Turkey,
right,
as a counterbalance to Europe. Going back even to the 16th century, the Brits were encouraging close relations with the Ottoman Empire as a balance against the power of the Austro-Hungarian Empire and the French.
You know, this is an amazing story because, of course, there's been conflicts with President Erdogan and of course, decisions whether he would be part of the European Union or not. He is a member of, well, Turkey is a member of NATO. Tom, we don't have time today, but this is a confusing story. We need to take more time at some point to chat about Turkey. I final question for you, because I want to move on to Iran and Iraq here in a moment. Is he perceived as the Trump, pardon the pun, Trump player in the Middle Eastern community because he has good relations with Syria, with Iran, with Russia?
No, I don't think so, because he doesn't have good relations with Israel.
No.
The Trump player is Russia.
Okay.
Who has good relations with everyone.
With the exception of the many in the European community and the U.S. All right, let's move on to, since we're talking about having good relations, first, I want to run through this date may take a little longer, the impact of the Iran sanctions on Europe. And of course, Iran is in the process of keeping close connections with President Erdogan and Turkey. And I'm focusing on him, not the country. That is President Erdogan. Then, of course, we have the disputes right now in Syria and, of course, Iran's very dismissive actions against the move of the embassy in Israel. I'm wondering, What is to be expected from Iran, and what is the concerns related to the Iranian sanctions?
Well, after 2015, the Europeans simply jumped in as fast as they could to take advantage of the lifting of the sanctions.
Right.
And they started striking a number of very good deals. One very, very big deal was the sale of Airbus jets to Iran. I think it's worth $20 billion or something.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is that Trump has made no secret of the fact that there are going to be secondary sanctions. So any company who sells anything to Iran will face sanctions from the U.S. So you cannot sell to Iran and also sell your things to the United States. In the case of Airbus, it's complicated by the fact that a lot of the parts for the Airbus planes that are being sold to Iran are also being produced in Alabama. So that deal could fall by the wayside, and it's worth $20 billion to Airbus. So that's going to be, you know, it's a big chunk. It's worth a lot of money to this company in Alabama, too.
Is there a sense
There are other things, too. There's the French oil company Total is going to lose $5 billion.
Uh-huh.
And there's a whole scree of different projects worth, you know, tens of billions of dollars in trade to EU countries, which they went into, they argue, in good faith.
Is there a sense that there may be a way out related to the Iranian deal? Because obviously the president is adamant about the current arrangement not being acceptable. What role might the European community play in working around that, or for that matter, giving a, if you will, building a bridge to solve the concerns that President Trump has so eloquently articulated? I say that, my description.
I don't think so. I mean,
okay,
all of the German, the French, the British, they're all very angry with President Trump over Iran.
Okay.
And they can't see a way out. And they've all said that they can't see a way out. Macron is particularly angry.
Mm-hmm.
He thought he had a good relationship with Trump and realized that it was only on the surface. Well, that's how he feels anyway, and okay, he's more or less said that. Boris Johnson felt that he wasted his time flying to Washington, and he had been told by Mike Pompeo, apparently, that if he did come to Washington, the decision could be at least delayed for a couple of weeks. So they're all very, very angry. They cannot see, and they've been told by the Trump administration that there is no way out, that they've just got to like it and lump it.
Okay, I want to move on another item nearby, and that's the Iraqi elections. And this is not necessarily a positive item for the U.S., as I've been reading. We have an old face that's now taking over as president of Iraq, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, Al-Sadr. And
Al-Sadr.
He was one of those leading Shia militia against the U.S. during the 2003 war. However, he's not necessarily all bad. He doesn't like the U.S., but it's also very much the case that he doesn't like Iran either.
Right. That's a religious issue.
Very well with the Saudis. Before the elections, he was a guest of the Saudis in Riyadh, and he got the backing of the Crown Prince, Mohammed bin Salman, who said, "We like you." The Iranians, on the other hand, and he's also formed a coalition with the Communist Party, which is not quite like Communist Party of old, just far left. And the Iranians have said that they don't like him and they don't want anyone in power who's going to be liberal minded or in coalition with the left wing.
I want to move on to a few other items, but I want to ask a quick response to this one, Tom. And again, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com, Look Ahead Radio, joining us from London. With all that we've been talking about with President Erdogan, his relations with improving relations with Britain, the Anglo-Turkish strategic relationship that's being built, we've just mentioned the Iraqi elections, the role of the Saudis, the disruption in the Middle East. Does there seem to be a sense that by having all this chaos, there's less chance of any sort of major strategic initiative being established there in the Middle East that would influence or harm either European or American interest.
So I quite don't understand. You mean by having the chaos,
that in fact
we're more likely to have peace?
Let's put it this way. You won't have a strategic alliance being built. There's been some concerns related to Syria, Iran, Russia, and Turkey creating a strategic alliance.
That's an interesting new take on it. But, you know, at the same time, I think stability is generally preferred to instability.
Okay. Speaking of instability, very quick question. New Italian government plans. We talked about this last week. What's the status there?
Well, you know, last week it looked as if there wasn't going to be an Italian government. It's still not absolutely definite. This is very interesting. You've got the far left and the far right.
Mm-hmm.
One is the Five Star Movement on the left, and one is the far right movement called the League.
Mm-hmm.
I've always argued that the far left and the far right have more in common than either do with centrist parties. And I'm being proven right in Italy. They're thinking of forming a coalition of the far right and the far left.
Okay, so are we looking at the possibility of a another election, or will this coalition...
I think they could form a coalition government of the extreme left and the extreme right. And the result, the markets are responding by crashing. In one day, the shares in the banks and the Italian banks have dropped by 1.1%. They're talking about... Italy's borrowing costs have absolutely rocketed, and the far left and far right, Five Star Movement and League, have responded by saying that they might just default.
Wow.
On their debt.
That, of course, will upset, I think, the European community significantly. All right, we're going to take a quick break on that. We're going to wrap things up here in just a moment with a focus on China here on Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And Tom, it just coincidentally works that we're going to focus on China here for the next 5 minutes. Of course, we're going to wrap things up with an interesting topic, Hog Hotel in China. But before we get to that, more important story. We noted that China has launched its first aircraft carrier, and if I'm not mistaken, it goes into sea trials this week. What impact does this have, if you will, on the world politic, and what is the opinion there of the European community about this?
Well, it's actually their second aircraft carrier. The first one they bought, used from Ukraine. It was sort of partially built.
Right.
So this is their second aircraft carrier, but it's the first one that's ever been built entirely in China. Now, part of it was to the blueprint of the Ukrainian aircraft carrier, but it's a significant step. They join a sort of unique club. There's not many countries that can afford to and have the technology to build their own aircraft carriers, which just shows you how China is developing. There's only about half a dozen at the most. And they finished this one, and they've already started work on their third aircraft carrier. And it might be very quickly that the fourth one will be being built as well. Now, this compares to 11 in the American Navy, so don't start panicking. The size of the ship is about half that of American ships and carries about half the number of aircraft.
Mm-hmm.
But it still means that China can project itself. That's the purpose of aircraft carriers. It can project itself much further militarily and politically than it has been able to do in the past.
Real quick question on this one for you, Tom. Does the European community see this as a threat, or more just a matter of, okay, we're seeing the conclusion of what has been recognized as a major military influence, power, whatever you want to describe. Is it a casual concern or
It is of concern. It's more concern of countries like Australia and New Zealand.
Okay.
But this, your question opens the door to another conversation, and that is, I think, there's a growing awareness in Europe because of the problems that they're having with the United States at the moment, or the Trump mm-hmm. administration, that they have to have better relations with China.
Interesting. And of course, we've talked about this in relationship to Britain as well, which has working to strengthen its trade relations with China directly as a result of a train. We talked about that a while back. I want to move on to another item before we wrap things up. Always like to enjoy, always look forward to a light humored or a light note as we wrap up things on looking ahead for the week ahead, but also viewpoints around the world. Hog Hotel in China.
A seven-story hotel for hogs in China, which holds 7,000 porkers.
For what purpose?
For breeding them.
Wow.
For breeding them.
Where?
And then selling them as bacon.
Seven stories.
And if you wonder how they get from one to the other, they have elevators. And they just herd them into the elevator and take them up to the next floor. Give them a bath or a shower and then take them down to the next floor.
Right. All right. Seven-story hog hotel in China. Where in China? Do you know the city?
Where is it? Guangxi.
Okay. Well, I can tell you it's probably a very...
Oh, I'm sorry. No, wait a minute. It's Yangzhang. It's in the mountains.
Well, as we know here in the States, very odoriferous. Tom, do appreciate your time this afternoon. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Look forward to conversations next week. Thanks for being with us, Tom.
Thank you, Lockwood.
Viewpoints around the world.
Look Ahead Radio is a production of The Talk Station.